Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. This is episode 244. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 gray co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
Pretty good. Pretty good. The Braves look terrible, but that's aside the point. The AFL's on, talking rookies and prospects, and you know, I'm not going to worry too much about the Braves. And you know what's weird is like kind of like doing more and more like stuff as an analyst. It kind of is taking my fandom out of the game, sadly. Like I'm not all that upset, which is weird. Like, you know, I don't know. It's a weird feeling, but I just didn't have the passion for the team that I've had in the past, more so like just, I guess, being so much into minor league ball and rooting for players and just baseball in general is interesting. I don't know if other people experience that too, but my fandom is sadly not what it once was.
Well, come over to the Red Sox and you won't have to worry about playing in the postseason lately. But it is kind of, you know, obviously I want my team in the postseason and all, but when they're not, it's like almost like you can sit back, relax, and just watch the games like without any, you know, emotion involved. Like, you know, I'll find teams to root for. Like, you know, Baltimore is obviously a fun team to root for. But yeah, I don't get all pissed off about it right now because my team is, you know, finished last place this season. But right now in the process of just cleaning house, like pitching coach gone. I think did they fired a hitting coach already as well? I can't remember. Third base coach gone. Like they're just cleaning house right now. Got to wonder if Cora is next and they're just gonna do a complete, you know, house cleaning of the coaching staff. We'll see. But yeah, talking prospects, rookies today, you know, give you a little reprieve there from your Braves getting dominated by Zach Wheeler at the current point in time, though he doesn't have a no-hitter anymore. We were going to wonder if it was going to be on air with a no-hitter, but yeah, gave up a single to Albies. So that is out the books here. It's, I think, seventh inning now in that game. But Yeah, talking some rookies today. Some interesting rookies that, you know, either, you know, thrived in the second half or kind of fizzled out a little bit in the second half for one reason or another. Just some interesting, you know, kind of polarizing rookie names heading into 2024. We got a dozen names on the docket before we get into all of that. The usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter or X, whatever the heck it's called these days. Chris is at RotoCleg. I'm at EricRust04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. We greatly appreciate those. And make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com, for more work from each of us, including all of our Dynasty, Prospect, and FYPD rankings. Now, Chris and Beck are doing daily AFL write-ups out there. I'm going through my Team Dynasty reports and Team Prospect rankings. So a lot of great stuff on both platforms, so go check those out. All right, Chris, let's hop right into it with, you know, who else right now than Evan Carter, who has just absolutely been on fire ever since his promotion about a month ago or so. In 75 plate appearances to end the season, he slashed .306, .413, .645 with 5 home runs, 3 steals, and even 4 doubles as well. He's absolutely, you know, he's the talk of the town right now in terms of rookies and shining brightly in the postseason as well, to the point where we've gotten, I'm sure you have as well, and I think we've been tagged in some of these together, a lot of questions about, you know, how high is he now? Is he the number one prospect? How is he top 25 dynasty, this and that? So where are you at with Carter? Like, let's say you rostered Carter right now in dynasty leagues. Would you be looking to maybe field offers, you know, to possibly sell high to see what you get? Or would you be holding on right now and not looking to sell?
I think I'd sell. I think that as much as I like Carter, I've always liked Carter. Some of the comments and the evaluations now have gone really through the roof. And
yep.
I'm not quite sure I'm there yet. I still look at the, I don't know, the overall profile is still intriguing to me. But I think that when we're talking about Carter in the sense that he's being talked about right now, I'd see where you can cash out. Do I think he's a top 100 dynasty asset? I do. But
yeah, fair.
But I wouldn't go much higher than that personally. I think there's certainly opportunities to sell right now just because of the torrid start that he's been on. I mean, and the dominant postseason too, like what he's done has been pretty crazy. And I think he's a great player. Like, don't get me wrong, but I'm not sure the power is going to be what people think. Like, he hit 5 home runs in 75 regular season plate appearances. So, like, that is great. He had a home run already in the postseason, 17 plate appearances, hitting .500. The .706 OBP is absurd. And I think you can just capitalize on this and really get something. Because I look at the contact rates, and they're okay. Like, Carter's going to make better contact than this. He's 70% overall and 76.7% zone. He doesn't chase. Like, we know that. Like, this has been the kind of story of his minor league career. Doesn't chase much at all. So that's obviously, like, what you want to see. But I do think that he's probably more of a 15 home run bat, and I've seen it thrown out that he could be like a 25-25 type, and I just don't see that personally. Not a knock on Carter. He's going to play up in OBP league. He's going to be a really great dynasty asset, but I'm 100% looking to sell.
Yeah, I think I'm there with you. And as you mentioned, like, this is not us saying that we don't think Carter's going to be good, because I think, you know, we've both had Evan Carter as a stud top 10 prospect, so obviously we think he's going to be good, but perceived value is everything in dynasty, as we've mentioned time and time again. And right now, perceived value on Carter is through the roof. And another thing we've mentioned a lot is the, you know, the ideal times to buy or sell a prospect in dynasty leagues. And Carter is firmly in one of those windows where the prospect comes up, debuts, and tears the cover off the ball, as he has now. And I don't look much into, you know, X stats, you know, at least too much. Like, he has a .395 X slug, which is, quick math, 50 points below his actual slug, which is kind of ridiculous to see that big of a gap there. But yeah, I think he might be a 20 homer guy. I can see him getting up to 20, but yeah, do I think he's going to be, you know, having years where he gets up to 30? I don't think so. Not unless he, you know, maybe he puts on a lot of bulk this offseason or moving forward, and maybe. But yeah, I think more like 18 to 20. I think that's going to be the sweet spot for him. And yeah, this guy could be like a 2020 caliber player with a good OBP. So like, he's going to be good. He's going to be a top 100 guy, maybe even gets close to top 50. But like, that's still to be determined. I think people are already putting him there. And like, I would still take Jordan Lawler right now. And I think if you we put a poll out right now, who would you take, Carter or Lawler? I bet you, what, two-thirds probably say Carter, maybe even more than that, maybe three-quarters. So if you could trade Carter for like a Lawler, get another piece with him or a draft pick or something like that, I'd probably look to do so. It can't hurt to at least entertain offers this offseason on Evan Carter's, given his value is absolutely skyrocketed over the last month or so. But it's a good player, but yeah, definitely an ideal time to at least entertain selling for sure. Another guy here, Nolan Jones, who did you think, like, Chris, I told you before the year, Nolan Jones is going to go 2020 this year. What would you have said?
No way.
To go along with a 297. This guy almost went 300, 2020, and he only had, how many games did he play? 106, so little under two-thirds of a season. So he was on, like, right around the 30-30 pace, you know, pace for about 90 runs, 95 RBI or so, with a 297, 389, 542 slash line. Like, in my home keeper league, we keep 10 in that league. He's, you know, approaching keeper territory for me. Like, I didn't think this would be a thing when I picked him up, you know, a handful of months back when he started getting hot back in, what was it, June or whatever it was, the point where, you know, I think he's a top 100 guy now too. And obviously there's still, you know, some issues with in the profile, obviously some swing and miss. Career 30.3% K rate, was 29.7% this year. You know, whiff rate 31.9. You know, zone contact is about 10% below league average. So there are some issues there. So I don't really see 297 again. Probably more like, you know, 265, 270, something like that. But the power is there. He's a sneaky athlete. I don't know about 20 steals again, but maybe he's a 25, 15 guy with a 270 or so average. That's still like top 50 caliber moving forward. But I don't know. Where are you at on Jones now? This is definitely a pretty intriguing profile for sure.
Yeah, 100%. I think he's like a top 75 dynasty asset. He's not going to be as good as he was in the second half. And the numbers were just absurd with what he did in the second half of the season. And he ranked as the ninth best hitter in OBP leagues from after the All-Star break on, which is just highly, highly impressive to do. So I don't know. I'm curious if there's more in the tank. I don't think you need more in the tank, honestly, from what we've seen from him. If he can just do his thing and get everyday playing time, get half his games in cores, I think there's a really intriguing profile here. Not to mention, you know, it's just the well-rounded aspect of his game. He's got big power. He's got sneaky speed. I think people underrated that. Stealing 20 bases, I wouldn't make that the expectation again. But I think there's more power to be seen. And if he's a 25-15 type player, you'll take that with the high OBP skills that he offers. I think some might be scared away a bit by the contact rates and the strikeout rate. Like, can he manage to keep this up? Like, and I think those questions do need to be answered. But I will say, like, we did see improvement, like, as the season wore on, like, things did improve. So I'm hoping that can stick and he can just be the stud. But I would be wary of those things. But he balances out enough to be a really serviceable fantasy asset.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I think he's a big guy that never probably not a top 50 guy, but top 50 to top 100, depending on the year, definitely has the skills for that. If he can keep that K rate in check, maybe improve the contact skills a little bit, I'll feel even better. But I'm still pretty in on Nolan Jones. If he's another guy, though, if you at least want to, you know, entertain some offers, at least think about it. Maybe you get something that you can't refuse. But he's one where it would take a good amount for me to trade him right now. But as I think he's mostly legit. But yeah, like we were saying, even if he's 25-15, 270, something like that, that's still like, you know, top 75, top maybe even close to top 50 player, depending on how many, you know, runs and RBIs he adds to that. And obviously, Coors Field, always going to help. All right, moving over. Actually, one last thing. I was meant to bring this up. There were five players that went 15-15 in the second half. Ronald Acuna Jr., 20-32, obviously. Julio Rodriguez, 1915. Kyle Tucker, 1615. Should have been 1715. I'm going to be pissed off about that till the end of time. Bobby Witt Jr., 1622. And then Nolan Jones, 1515. Lane Thomas almost stuck on there as well, 1412 for Lane.
Nice.
And this kind of leads me in perfectly. I didn't mean to, but to this next guy we're talking about who went 1414 in the second half. And that's Zach Geloff, kind of like one of the lone bright spots on that Oakland Athletics team this year. Didn't have much to get excited about, but hey, Geloff came up and did very well. 1414, as I mentioned, and 300 plate appearances on the nose, / 267, 337, 504. You know, did kind of fizzle out a little bit after, had a really hot start, then cooled off a bit, then had a couple of another hot weeks near the end of the season, but very up and down rookie year for Geloff. But hey, you know, 30-30 pace, you can't really fault that too much. You know, does have a lot of swing and miss in the profile, 33.7% whiff rate, kind of like Jones, zone contact about 10% below league average. He's around 72% zone contact, below average contact rate overall. I don't know. Geloff is one where I think he's going to be, you know, decent. He's got that power speed. I mean, he's got that flips of 20-20 annually. But obviously, there's nothing around him in that lineup. It's going to be a bottom 10 offense. The park doesn't help. And still some holes in the profiles. He's one that, like, I wasn't really buying in. I was kind of preaching sell high back when he was like really hot and one of the hottest hitters in all of baseball. So right now, like, I think he's solid, but he's one where I'd probably be looking to sell right now in dynasty leagues. How about you, Chris?
I think so too. It's kind of the opposite effect of Jones. And I think some people may look and be like, okay, well, why do you like Nolan Jones, but not Zach Geloff? And I think you mentioned some of the reasons. One, because the lineup's terrible. The Rockies lineup isn't much better, but he does get Coors Field on his side, which helps. The Coliseum, just not ideal by any means to hit in. And when I'm looking at the profile, like, it's just, I have concerns like about how much Geloff is going to strike out. And this has been kind of a long running thing. Like, Nolan Jones has had shown moments where he makes plenty of contact, but you also look at the passivity of the hitter himself and the chase rates, and Jones doesn't chase nearly as much. So he's going to put up higher OBPs, which certainly is a benefit. And with Geloff, you are getting more chase in the profile. It's not like a insane amount, but it's enough where, you know, 32.5%, kind of like, not sure which way this could go. So I would argue that Jones certainly has way more power too. Like, I don't think there's any denying the power here.
Agreed.
Geloff kind of made the most of his launch angles and was able to get to 14 home runs, but also, like, there was a lot of very highs and there was a lot of very lows here. Like, when we look at the month to month splits, like, we're looking at some major extremes here. And, like, that's a bit concerning to me when we're seeing, like, kind of the fall off that ultimately happened. And so, yeah, I don't know. Like, I think the ups and downs were pretty wild, to say the least. But, you know, who is Zach Geloff? I'd say that's still to be determined. I feel like I have a better grasp of who Nolan Jones is ultimately.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. All right, moving over to a pair of catchers now, starting with Yainer Diaz from the Houston Astros, who just quietly was one of these the better fantasy catchers overall this year. He only had 377 plate appearances, but in those plate appearances, / 282, 308, 538, with 23 home runs, you know, pretty good quality of contact metrics, but same time, this is a very kind of hot or cold profile, a lot of red, but a lot, you know, not a lot of blue, but some blue, two very important blue balls, so to speak, in his profile, a 2.9% walk rate and a whopping 44% chase rate. And for context, MLB average this year, 28.5%. But Chris, contact rates are pretty solid, kind of right around league average for both zone and overall. Where are you at with Yainer Diaz? Kind of an interesting profile.
He might be the biggest enigma of, like, any type of hitting profile there is, because he swings at everything. Like, you look at the swing rates and they're just insanely high. Like overall swing rate, 59%. Like that's nuts. Chased at a 46.5% clip as well. And for reference, like the league average swing rate's 47%. I mentioned that is, so he's 12% or 11 percentage points over that, on nearly 12 percentage points higher. And the league average chase rate's 31.9% this past year. And Yonder Díaz chased at a 46.4% rate. The zone swing percentage, which is good. Like you want to see a lot of zone swings, 78% for Díaz, league average being 68%. So tons of swings. He makes fine contact, especially on pitches in the zone. And so it kind of balances out everything. But holy cow, like it's just such extremes because he's swinging at everything, so he's not going to take a walk. OBP is going to play way down. There's big power in the profile. Like, this isn't a surprise. Like, he's always hit the ball very hard. And he's good behind the plate too, which I find pretty interesting. I think he's got some pretty good skills for a catcher. So, yeah, certainly helps his ability to get at bats. I think next year he probably gets more than 377 plate appearances, which will help his fantasy value. But he also could see the value tank a little bit. Like, I mean, he hit 23 home runs over 377 plate appearances. What if he doesn't kind of put up those pace numbers per se? And I think there's some question marks here just because of the swing rates and the walks, etc. So he still has to answer those questions of who will he be? And I'm not totally sure yet.
Yeah, it's like I was saying, a very interesting profile. I think he's going to be a 280 hitter? No. But could he be 260 with 25 home runs and, you know, probably good amount of counting stats given, you know, the lineup he's in, ballpark he's in, also pretty good. Yeah, I think there's a lot of good in the profile here. I would love to see him walk a little bit more, but, you know, that's never really who he's been. He's always been this kind of guy. It's overly aggressive. But, you know, with contact skills like that, you know, it can work. This is kind of like, I would love to have seen, I mentioned this the other day with like hoping we had like Savant back in the day to see, you know, the, you know, Pujols home run off of a Lidge to EV. But I would have loved to have seen like the chase rate for like Vladimir Guerrero Sr. It would have been like astronomical, but he always put the bat in the ball. So if you have the contact skills to do it, I mean, obviously it's not great, but I feel okay. I think he'd be like a top 10 catcher moving forward, maybe even top five. Like he shows some improvement there. I mean, 260, 25, you know, that's potentially top five catcher there. And, you know, I'm starting to question if I like him long-term more than this next guy, which, you know, might sound outlandish, but next guy up is Francisco Alvarez. And obviously he was the, you know, top overall prospect on Pipeline, you know, top catching prospect for the last handful of years now. But he has even more holes in the profile right now than Yiner Diaz does. And Alvarez did hit 25 home runs in 423 plate appearances this year, but slash 209, 284, 437. Again, pretty solid quality of contact, 13% barrel rate, 45% hard hit rate, you know, EV a touch over 90 miles an hour. But the contact skill, and this is what I've always been kind of questioning. Well, they're not terrible, but zone contact is below average, whiff rate above league average as well. I don't know, Chris. Like, who do you like? You still like Alvarez more than Diaz moving forward? Because I think these two are actually getting pretty close. I'm not sure who I would rank ahead. I have to like really dig into this more, but I think they're closer than people think.
I think so. It's not crazy to think that they're close. I think that Alvarez probably has more upside here. The power is not that dissimilar, and that seems crazy to say, but Diaz hits the ball incredibly hard. You know, the difference is that you've got the age gap. So, like, that's obviously, you know, 25 to 21. Diaz isn't old by any means, but Alvarez doing what he did at such a young age, you know, I think the power might be pretty similar here. And you kind of look across the board, and there's some interesting comparisons to make here. It's like, who will Francisco Alvarez be? Who will Yiner Diaz be? And I think then you kind of begin to really question this whole thing. So the difference is like in the profile, and I'm not gonna say that I'm gonna sit here and like form a solid opinion on Alvarez based on a rookie season at a young age, you know, but
right.
Diaz showed the ability to make plenty of zone contact, like enough to balance out the very, very extreme chase rates. And while Alvarez made respectable zone contact at 80.7%, Diaz was above league average. Alvarez way below league average, like 5 percentage points below league average here. His overall contact rate also 5 percentage points below league average. His swinging strike rate was 2% higher than MLB average. The difference is that he is a little more patient. He's going to walk. He's going to take his walks where Yonder Diaz is not going to give you the walks. And ultimately, like, we know Alvarez has big raw power, but so does Yonder Diaz. So, you know, I think the consensus will say, like, Alvarez is way better than Yonder Diaz as a fantasy asset. But, you know, I think you're kind of onto something here where the power's there for both of them. It's just like, what do you prefer more? Like, would you rather take a shot that Alvarez has a higher OBP? I mean, even though he walked 8%, still had a 284 OBP this year. So kind of like, not really sure what we're going to get there. And I mean, I'm still team Alvarez over Diaz, but, you know, it's not crazy to say that this one might be closer than people think.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a discussion, at least. Well, let's move over to the other New York team here, though, with Anthony Volpe, who, Chris, do you think Anthony Volpe's having had the most disappointing 2020 season ever? I mean, it's still, you know, 21 home runs, 24 steals. You know, you can't be too upset with that. But at the same time, he slashed 209, 283, 383 over 601 plate appearances. And again, he's 22, rookie season, not trying to, like, you know, look too much into this. And you look at the metrics, you know, across the board, like quality of contact, you know, contact rates, like, you know, they're not the greatest, but they're not bad either. Like, there's a lot of, like, league average ish give or take a little bit either way kind of rates here and profiles. So I don't know, is Volpe a buy low? Is he a sell? It's kind of a weird player to value right now given the 2020 year, but the really bad slash line.
Yeah. And I kind of wonder, it's just like, as the season wore on, like, he honestly got a bit worse. Like, its second half numbers, you know, looked even worse than they were in the first half. He hit 200 with a 279 OBP in the second half. 8 home runs, 8 stolen bases there. 26.3% K rate. And kind of when you compare the overall StatCast data, like, you did see a dip. So, like, from the first to second half, like, his average EV did drop, like, near a mile and a half. Like, that's a pretty substantial drop. The interesting thing is he did have a 9% barrel rate in the second half, which is pretty solid. It's slightly below league average, but considering the EV, he's like, okay, like, you'll take that. And the hard hit rate was down. I don't know. It's a weird profile. I still like this profile. I think that Volpe will make more contact and enough where he can ultimately provide you enough value. His contact skills are there, like second half, 83%. And the overall contact rate is 75%, like swing strike rate of 11.5%. Those are solid numbers. And I think ultimately there's pressure to play in the Bronx. Like, that's not easy to do for a young kid to step in and be the shortstop and have such high expectations of the team. But I would say that next year is going to be better for him. I really do believe that. Having a full season under his belt. So I think you could argue that he's a buy low at this point. And the power of speed alone is enough to provide fantasy value, even if he's not giving you a ton of batting average. But I'd expect those batting averages to tick up, like, to be like 240. And if so, like, maybe he gets into a few more home runs. He's a 25 home run bat. So, yes, I will say he's a buy low despite the, I would say, disappointing rookie season from Volpe, but it's hard to say disappointing when a 22-year-old comes in and goes 21-24 from home run stolen bases.
Exactly. That's what I was saying. Like, it feels disappointing overall, but again, 21-24, you can't really be too upset about that. But moving forward with Volpe, Chris, he settles in as a top blank player, top 100, top 75. What do you think?
I would say, like, right now, I'd value him as like a top 150 dynasty asset. He can probably move up to, like, to be a top 100 guy unless we see the hit tool really take a step forward.
Yeah, I think that's fair. All right, last hitter here before we go over to the pitchers. maybe the most disappointing name on this list so far, and that's Miguel Vargas of the Los Angeles Dodgers. You know, after last year, you know, 50 plate appearances last year, didn't do well, but it was only 50 plate appearances. But this year, 304 plate appearances, slash 195, 305, 367, 7 home runs, and 3 steals. He's one, Chris, I don't know where he like fits in with the Dodgers moving forward anymore. Like, has he fallen out of favor there? Obviously, with the Dodgers, you gotta like perform right away. They have so many other guys that are waiting for their shots, and he has not performed yet. I mean, the contact skills, like in the approach as well, everything to do with plate discipline is pretty solid with him. You know, better than league average whiff and chase rates, solid contact rates, doesn't K too much. You know, walk 12%, 12.5% this year, but the quality of contact has been pretty mediocre, below average EVs and hard hit rates, you know, barrel rate around 6%, not terrible, but not good either. So like, where is he moving forward? You know, I think we both kind of thought maybe he'd be like a 2010 guy. I don't know. I think the 10 is still possible, but is the 20 possible anymore, Chris? Like, he hasn't really shown enough power right now to make me think that's still a possibility. Maybe he's 15-10, but again, has he fallen out of favor, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, this seems like a Gavin Lux case where, you know, we kind of thought that Lux was just like out of favor. And, you know, obviously Lux still hasn't performed. He got hurt. I think he was in the midst of a breakout. He's going to break out this year. But aside the point, like, I Miguel Vargas is better than what we've seen. I don't think there's any questioning that. But I will say that ultimately the performance was not what we hoped that it would be. We knew that the power was a bit inflated playing in the PCL, but we weren't sure, like, you know, his EVs last year were okay. Like, they weren't great, which is why, like, I didn't go too absurd on the kind of power projection that I was looking at with him. And so from that standpoint, like, you look at what the difference in AAA this year in the majors, ultimately, like, we're not all that dissimilar. So, like, his average exit velocity in the majors, this is across 3 and 4 plate appearances, was 86.8. And in AAA, it was 87.8. So, about a mile higher. His barrel rate in AAA was 6.5%. It was 6% in the majors. So, like, looking at those numbers, like, pretty similar when we go look at the contact skills, like, he's always been a really solid contact guy. So in AAA, we're looking at a chase rate of 17.9%. And in the majors this year, that number was 24%. So we see a nice increase there. He actually made, I don't know if you'd believe me, but he made more contact in the majors than he did in AAA, which is a bit of a surprise. So you look at the numbers, 84.6% zone contact in AAA, 81% overall contact. But in the majors, those were 80.6% overall and 88% zone contact. So more contact in the majors, no results at all. Look at the BABIP, 224. Yeah, I mean, I think Vargas has more in the tank, but maybe he's a 15 home run bat that doesn't give you the best averages. He's a better OBP asset. And I'm not sure where the speed falls in it, honestly. Like, I don't really know if I'd give him more than 10 stolen bases. So, you know, that's somebody that's not overly valuable in fantasy. And even though we want to be high on him from, like, this guy could be something, but I don't know. I'm not really in here.
Yeah, it's hard to be in right now. I think you're right on the ball there. I think he's probably a guy that we pick up off the waiver wire a couple of times every year when he gets hot, but that's probably about it. I don't see him ever being like a guy that's like a staple of your lineup. Unless something changes, I don't know. Maybe that will. But yeah, not looking. The profile is not looking that great right now. Let's just say that. All right, let's go ahead and take a quick break. We'll come back and get into some pitchers.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh baby, Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, welcome back. Heading over to pitchers now. We have five names here, and we'll keep it right with the Dodgers here for this first name. Bobby Miller, who's been kind of quietly one of the best pitching, you know, rookies of the year so far, or so far, season's over. But in 22 starts this year, 124 and a third innings, pitched to a 3.76 ERA and a 17.3% K minus walk rate. So 23.6% K, 6.3% walk rate. And obviously, Chris, you and I saw him last year out in the AFL, and he was, you know, the stuff is obviously very impressive. He mixes five pitches at least 16% of the time. Very diverse arsenal. He also threw 14 sweepers, but we're not going to count that. 0.7% usage rate. But the other five, all between 16% and 28.4% usage rates. That's the four-seam, sinker, curve, slider, and changeup. And all of them fared pretty well. And you could get, you know, missed bats with, you know, above 29% on all three of the off-speed there, the curve, slider, and change. You know, he's getting ground balls too, nearly 50% ground ball rates. I mean, I'm wondering why, like, the hype on him, Chris, isn't higher. I mean, it's not like he's like on Pittsburgh or something like that. He's on the Los Angeles Dodgers and was one of the top, like I said, one of the top pitching rookies this year. A lot of red on the Statcast, on the Savant page, excuse me. So where do you have him moving forward? Like, is he up there close to, you know, the guys like, you know, G-Rod and Gavin Williams? Like, do you think he's in that top 15 to 20 SP range right now moving forward?
I mean, he should be. Look at what he did down the stretch. I mean,
right
from August through the end of the year, he had a 3.20 ERA. That came with a 3.44 FIP. So, you know, it suggested that he performed like we thought he could. And you know, 60 Ks over 64 and two-thirds innings. I mean, I think you expect the strikeouts to tick up. If the strikeouts come, like given the stuff, man, he's really going to be taken off. I think that this is an arm to invest in because he's not getting the hype and the love that he ultimately should be. Like it's pretty wild to really look at this and say, all right, these guys have gotten love, but Bobby Miller really hasn't. And I don't know, maybe it's just the K rate that's keeping him down. Like, I don't know. I'm interested to really see ultimately why people don't love the profile. But look at that. And I hate to do this. I hate the Arsenal comparisons on Savant. But
if you weren't going to bring it up, I was. Because the names are damn impressive.
It's absurd. Gerrit Cole, Jacob deGrom, Hunter Green, Luis Severino, and Spencer Strider. That's absurd. Like, oh my goodness. So I'm just looking at the pitch usage too. Like, okay, did something change? And ultimately, yeah, it did. Like, he used the four-seam more, and he used the sinker a lot less. He used the changeup more, too, which I find pretty interesting. So, in September, a lot more changeups. I actually would like to see him use the sweeper more. Like, he's using the slider and the sweeper way less. I'd like to see that come back. But I think Bobby Miller's a really, really good buy in Dynasty right now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think he's already a top 20 dynasty arm and probably should be top 15. Like, I think I still would take Grayson Rodriguez over him. But, like, who would you take long-term between Bobby Miller and Gavin Williams?
I think it's close. I still like Gavin Williams, but I don't think it's that far off.
Yeah, I think they're absolutely in the same tier. And that's probably a tier that includes, you know, Rodriguez. Actually, no, I think Rodriguez is probably a tier ahead from here right now. But, yeah. These are all absolutely top 20 arms, and that kind of leads us right into Grayson Rodriguez, who ended the season very well. Obviously, he started the year first, you know, what was it, 10 starts or so, had ERA up over 6, but as the season, you know, wore on, just got better and better, went back down to AAA, worked on some things, came back up, and was a completely different pitcher. So you're looking at his final, what was it here, his final 11 starts from July 28th on. Only allowed more than 2 earned runs in 2 of those starts, which is absolutely phenomenal. Let's see, overall, I'm trying to pull up the numbers here. Yeah, he had 2.18 ERA over his last 11 starts and 2.58 in 13 starts after being recalled from AAA in mid-July. Like, this is the G-Rod that we were hoping was going to be there, the G-Rod we all thought he could be. And in my last dynasty rankings, Chris, and maybe this is aggressive, I fully admit that, I have him as my SP5. right now. Like, I think he's right in that tier with, you know, with Gallen and guys like that. You know, I think the ones I have him behind obviously are, was it Strider, Cole, Burns, and Jurie. But after that, I'm like, I made a strong argument for him at five in my own mind. And I'm like, all right, I'm putting him there. And I think he's got the stuff to back it up. And I think he's, you know, this is just the beginning of what you saw from Rodriguez over the second half. Yeah, that's who he is. This is a guy that has a deep arsenal, a lot of good pitches, five pitches, four seam change, slider, curveball, and cutter, can get ground balls, can miss bats. Like, this guy is really good. People are seeing that now. And yeah, so I have him top five. I don't know. Again, might be aggressive. I'm sure you probably don't have him as high as that, but I felt good about that.
No, I think that's fair. I think he certainly belongs in at least like tier two of starting pitchers for Dynasty, because we can't judge him too strictly on what he did in the first half. Like, he was still coming back from injury and the stuff was not all there. And I think that was pretty clear. Like, we're looking at a totally different pitcher when he came back up after the All-Star break, after spending some time down in the minors working on some things. And it was clear, like, he looked like the Grayson Rodriguez of old. He had a 2.58 ERA, 2.76 FIP, which is absolutely nuts. He missed bats, kept the ball on the ground, very high clip, had 73 Ks in 76 and two-thirds innings. So, yeah, obviously you want to see more strikeouts, but also I think that the stuff is there for it. Like Bobby Miller, I don't see why he can't see the strikeout rate improve close to 30%. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that that's the case. Yep. Down the stretch, we saw Grayson Rodriguez throwing way more curveballs, which was fun, and actually way more four-seam fastballs. Like, kind of interesting there. But it ultimately worked because the fastball was up sitting in near 98, like 98, which is incredible. Like, when you look at the velocities month over month, and it was 96 in April, it was 97.2 in May, he came back in July and was 98. He was 98.3, and then he dipped a little bit in September, still mid, like 97.5. So really good numbers there. The whiff rates on his pitches in September, very high, at 41% whiff rate on the slider, 30% on the changeup, and 29% on the curveball. I think G-Rod's a dude, and yeah, I know he didn't have the best postseason start, but whatever. It's a young kid that is coming into his own off of injury, and he still needs time. I think he takes a major step forward next year.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that Jurie and him are still a discussion. I know people, like, I think that Yuri's way higher, and I do have him, Jurie, ranked higher, but only Jurie's my SP4 and G-Rod my SP5. I think that's still going to be a discussion long term, and you know, these are going to be two of the better arms in baseball, probably two guys that win some Cy Youngs in their career. Moving over to maybe the most underrated rookie pitcher this year, a guy that didn't really get a lot of buzz at all. Yeah, he's not as flashy as Bobby Miller or Grayson Rodriguez, but the performance was absolutely rock solid, and you know, might be in line for, you know, a lot of rookie of the year votes, and that's Tanner Bibee of the Cleveland Guardians here. In 25 starts, 2.98 ERA, 1.18 WHIP, 24.1% strikeout rate, 7.7% walk rate, and like I said, not as sexy, but man, Chris, he gets it done. And you know, maybe he's not an ace moving forward, but do you think Bibee could be, you know, like a solid SP2 for fantasy purposes?
No doubt about it. I think he's really, really good. He gets overshadowed by all the other rookies, especially one of his own teammates, right, Gavin Williams. So it's hard not to be overshadowed there. But I don't know. I think Bibee's pretty close to that level. You look at the performance, it's everything that you want, like, out of a pitcher. He's missing bats. He doesn't walk batters. And I know there's some differentials, like the Sierra was 4.19. He had 2.98 ERA, but a 3.52 FIP, like, suggests that he pitched up to par. He can go deep into games. Like, he's going to throw a lot of innings. I think that's a major advantage that he has. Like, I think we're going to see him pitch 175 plus innings next year, which is huge. So I don't know, man. I think Tanner Bibee is the real deal. I really like the arsenal. His fastball is a bit underrated. It's 95, sometimes gets up higher than that. His slider is devastating. His changeup is devastating. Like, we're looking at 38% whiff rate on the changeup and a 32% whiff rate on the slider. Really, really good stuff here. And I think you just need to see him find the right pitch mix. And we saw him kind of tinker with that some towards the end of the year with him throwing more sliders and more changeups. So this will be fun to ultimately follow and see. But I think Bybee is going to be just that very high floor arm. It's not flashy, but it's just a dude every year. And, you know, this is not a direct comp by any means, but it kind of reminds me of like early career Zach Gallen, where kind of people just doubted. It's like, okay, like he's striking out like one batter an inning, just getting the job done, posting good ratios, and look at Gallen now.
If anybody just heard me chuckle in the background, that wasn't at the comp, but more so, it's really eerie how synced up Chris and I are sometimes. So I was just going to say, he's kind of like, you know, I don't want to say a poor man, Zach Gallen, but I was trying to think of the right terminology, but like Zach Gallen, but just slightly scaled back. Because yeah, there are a lot of similarities there. So I love that you went there, as I was thinking that as well. But yeah, I think Bybee is going to be a very solid arm for a very long time. Probably a guy that always gets a little bit undervalued just because he's not flashy like the other names, but like this could just be an annual top 20, top 25 arm for sure. Like a good SP2, a guy that you can draft and forget about and redraft. And you know, he's going to give you some good stuff. Or Dynasty, probably, again, always will be undervalued. Moving over to a rookie that, you know, while he had flashed good stuff all season, and can't really fault the guy that had a, what was it, a 20, oh, no, sorry, 18.5% K minus walk rate in his second full year, or first full year, excuse me, after having a little bit of time last year. 5.09 ERA for Hunter Brown probably, you know, makes his season overall a bit of a disappointment, I think it's fair to say. 25 years old, you know, 6'2 righty here, but 26.8% K rate. And again, kind of going back to the, you know, the fun little similar pitchers to Hunter Brown based on velocity and movement on Servant, Garrett Cole, Tyler Glasnow, Zach Gallen, Taj Bradley, Zach Wheeler. So obviously the stuff is there. We saw that this year. You know, he goes to really three pitches, four seam, curveball, slider, mixes in a splitter every now and then, and the very occasional sweeper. But you know, he's got a good arsenal, Chris. Gets ground balls over 50% so far in his career ground ball rate. That's very impressive as well. Obviously, he can miss bats. And even though like the whiff rate was actually kind of lower than you think it was, but just allowed a little bit too much, you know, contact within the zone. And you know, the hard contact rate was a little bit higher than you'd want it. So that's the real issue here with Hunter Brown. But do you think it's an issue that, you know, he can correct moving forward, and maybe he can get back up to, you know, maybe the level that like Tanner Bybee and all these other guys are on?
I think it's possible. I still like Brown. It was a really up and down season for him. And I think some people probably have one foot out the door, but this arsenal's really good. And I thought the command was pretty solid most of the year. Like, he's made strides with his command and control like most of the year. You look at the Sierra of 3.74, like pretty solid compared to a 5.09 ERA, and even a 4.37 FIP shows that, you know, those indicators suggest that he pitched better than the results showed. So I'm willing to buy back in on Hunter Brown next year, despite the, I'd say, pretty atrocious second half. He was good in the first half. And you, when I read off the second half ERA of 6.57, you're like, wow, like this dude was really, really bad. He allowed a ton of home runs. Like, there was a lot of things going against him. But ultimately, like, I think these things are fixable. Like, he was just leaving the fastball over the heart of the zone, which cost him. Like, you're not going to like make major league hitters miss there. So you got to get that down. Got to get the location of the fastball down. I am interested to see like the pitch mix. The results seem to get worse actually as he threw the fastball more throughout the year. So that's something that I'm going to follow and, you know, kind of watch, like, what does he do with this pitch mix, and, you know, where does it settle in? I think he's got the stuff to be a solid starting pitcher. And I think the command is there as well. Like, I think there's going to be some volatility, but just got to locate just a bit better more regularly. And I think Hunter Brown will be fine.
Yeah. I still think there's a path to him being like a top 30 pitcher. I really do. So, yeah, absolutely a buy low for me this offseason as well. All right, last name for today's show, Brandon Pfaadt. Man, like, he's one of the more polarizing rookie arms this year. Very up and down, more so down than up. Finished with a 5.72 ERA in 96 innings, 1.41 WHIP. You know, xERA of 4.61. And he's one I just wrote up over on my Patreon in my Arizona Prospects, Arizona Diamondbacks Dynasty Reports. And like, the profile, you dig in, and I don't like it. You know, obviously, the surface stats were not great, but the profile even looks worse than that. Like, he has one pitch right now that was what did well this year, his sweeper. 180 batting average against, 323 slug, and a 33.7% whiff rate. The rest of his offerings, four seam, 325 batting average against, changeup, 409, sinker, 313, curveball, 294. So if you combine his four seam and his sinker, which was 57.5% usage rate, those two combined for a 343 batting average against and a 667 slug. You know, and the four seamer, you know, it was very, you know, a very polarizing pitch, a lot of discussion on it, whether it was good or bad entering the year. And it was flat out bad. Like, he doesn't command it well. He allows too many fly balls and line drives in general. You know, the major league average for pitchers, you know, combined fly ball and line drive rate this past season was around 48.5%. Pfaadt was at 59.1%. And he allowed the 30th highest average exit velo on fastballs or line drives, right around 95 miles an hour. And that was among the 372 pitchers who had enough batted ball events to qualify on Savant. So, I don't know, there's a lot of stuff to fix here, Chris. I'm not saying he can't do it, but I don't know. I'm not like fully out, but I think I'm one foot out the door on Brandon Pfaadt here.
I think he kind of flew under the radar with what he did in the second half. Like, he did tinker a lot with the pitch mix because he didn't have a choice to. Like, right. The stuff was not there. And from August through September, a 4.14 ERA and a 3.89 FIP are certainly massive strides forward, considering he had a 5.27 ERA on the season. So that's a big win in my book, the fact that he tweaked the pitch mix and he got results there. He did it in an interesting way. He actually struck out more batters than I expected he would in the second half because he threw the sinker more. But yet he struck out 64 in 58 innings, only walked 15. Major step forward there. In this process, like, we did see the four-seam usage go down, which was, I like, kind of wanted to see all along. Like, you know, the four-seam is not great, so he needed to really get rid of that. The sweeper, really good pitch. He began to throw it more in July, and he began to see those results. So I think this is one of those arms where he needs to lean on the sweeper and use the sinker to get ground ball outs, and I think there's a path to success here. I don't think Pfaadt's like a ace or anything, but I do think that there is potential for him to ultimately be a solid, like, SP3, SP4 type because the sweeper is so good. Changeup's a really good pitch as well. Like, those pitches both had whiff rates on them of 33.3% and 33.7%. I think the sinker is going to be the recipe to success. The four-seam, nix it, get rid of it, just throw the sinker, and everything will be all right. So I'm actually buying low on Pfaadt, but with the expectation that there's going to be some ups and downs, but I don't think he's going to be a high-end SP, but a really usable one in Dynasty.
Yeah, I could see him getting back, maybe approaching top 50 territory. I'm just really concerned, though, like, you know, even though he did tinker with the pitch, which is great, and that sweeper, as I mentioned, his best pitch, like, no doubt about it, throw it more. Love to see that. But at the same time, like, I think I would be more willing to buy back in if, like you mentioned, Chris, he did kind of ditch that four-seamer. Because that's such a bad pitch. It is not a good pitch. Even, you know, like September, 333 batting average again, 636 slug on it. Like, it's still absolutely terrible. You know, sinker, you know, definitely a better offering for him. So if he kind of goes with that sinker more, like you mentioned, gets rid of the four-seamer or just drastically cuts the usage rate, I'd be more willing to buy back in. I'm kind of in wait-and-see territory. It's just, I want to see that before I buy back in. But, hey, maybe we'll see. He already kind of started that trend. Kind of, I want to see where he's at next season, coming out of spring training with the usage rates in his first few starts. That'll be kind of interesting to see.
But all right, that's going to wrap up this episode. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us. And join us again next time. But until then, everyone take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.